Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, July 18th, 2013. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, Bob Stemsky returns with another no-chill experiment. This time, how does leaving your unfermented wort in a no-chill container for 4 months affect the finished beer? Stick around to find out. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. My username is basicbrewing, all one word. Also, you can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james. Our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. We're on Google Plus, too. You can find our little community on Google Plus by searching for Basic Brewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. You know how that works. When you go Amazon shopping, stop by our site first. Go to basicbrewing.com, click on the Amazon logo. That will take you to Amazon.com. And then when you shop and check out, we'll get a commission from whatever you buy. It won't cost you any extra, and we greatly appreciate your support. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. And we have our Basic Brewing iPhone app on iTunes and our Android app on Amazon.com. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, we're on the Stitcher app, and we're on the Windows phone directory, too. Check out our Brewer's Logbook at basicbrewingshop.com. In the front of the book is a calendar that you can use to track your fermentations and plan your brews, and that calendar is blank. So now that it's July, you can get a full 12 months of brewing in, and, you know, usually when you buy a calendar this time of year, it's you only use half of it. But now you get a full 12 months no matter when you buy it. And there is room in the back of the logbook to detail up to 50 batches of beer. If you want to put a tip in our tip jar, some coinage in our guitar case, you can go to basicbrewing.com/support. Thanks to everybody who has done so already. And protect your precious beer with one of our growler bags. The bag is essentially a cylindrical cooler that is just the right size to accommodate a 64-ounce growler or a couple of 24 or 22-ounce bombers or three 12-ounce bottles. And it has an adjustable strap so you can sling it over your shoulder. Check those out at basicbrewingshop.com. We only have a limited number of those available. Fun news for me this week. Ben Mills of Fossil Cove Brewing in Fayetteville, Arkansas, is brewing a beer based on one of my recipes. A couple of months ago, I dropped by a couple of home brews for Ben to sample, and one was the sour mash beer that Steve and I brewed up for Basic Brewing Video. Now, this was the one that was soured for 72 hours. And Ben liked it a lot and said that he wanted to collaborate on brewing a sour mash beer in his brewery, scaling up my recipe from 2 gallons to 2 barrels. He thought that that would make a great summer beer for the hottest part of the summer. And I agree. I was flattered and a bit intimidated, you know, because the sour mash stuff is a tricky business. And you know, I thought theoretically we could wind up with nothing but a bunch of stinky, nasty grain and not much else to show for it. Or we could come up with a tasty little sour summer brew. Well, it's risky, but Ben was confident. And this past weekend, we brewed it. Ben brewed it. And I shot video of Ben brewing. The mash soured to a nice level of tartness. And the wort going into the fermenter shows promise. The last update that I heard from Ben was that the yeast in the fermenter was very happy, so I have high hopes. So stay tuned for more details about that. I wrote up an article about the whole process, including my recipe, on beerandwinejournal.com. So check that out. You can see pictures of Ben's setup, including a picture of the pellicle on the top of the sour mash. So check that out, beerandwinejournal.com. Okay, let's get right into the experiment for this week. Bob Stemsky lives in Wisconsin, but he's in touch with a lot of brewers in Australia who are trying some really innovative brewing methods. Last year at the National Homebrewers Conference, Bob shared an experiment comparing a beer that had had traditional chilling against a beer whose wort had not been chilled but had been racked into a plastic container while it was hot and sealed to cool by itself overnight. Well, this year in Philadelphia, Bob shared an experiment comparing a no-chill beer that had been cooled overnight and pitched the next day against a beer whose wort had sat unpitched in a plastic container for 4 months. Well, here we are in the Bob Stemsky Presidential Suite here in the Courtyard Marriott. Bob Stemsky, welcome back to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks for having me, James.
And joining us in the room is Andy Sparks.
It's always fun to be on the show.
And Zot O'Connor.
Howdy.
And Steve Wilkes.
Who's enjoying some cheese curds via Bob Stemsky.
That's what that squeaking sound is.
Yeah.
Yeah. We have to say, we have to think if we've gained any weight this week, it's because of Bob, because he left these little, he left cheese curds and these little sausages in our room. And we, after we got back from Pro Night, Steve and I said, boy, we're kind of hungry. Oh, yeah, we have cheese curds and these little sausages. And Steve and I got into those, and I happened to look, after we ate all of them, I looked at the back of the package, and he said each of those little sausages was 100 calories. And Steve said, I think I ate 20. So, but the cheese curds are calorie-free, I think, so.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Anyway, the reason that we are convened is to talk about and to evaluate, I guess, an experiment by Bob. And we're talking about, we talked about no chill before last year, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And we're talking about no chill again. What do we got?
Well, one of the things about no chill is the fact that you don't have to use the wort right away. You know, traditionally, when I was a three vessel brewer, you got the wort out of the your mash tun, and you had to cool it real quick. You had to do it right away. That was the standard. Well, the Aussies, in their brilliance, did some work on it, and they said, well, you know, you really don't have to do it right away. It seems to clear itself and not have all the problems that were expected by letting it slow chill. And I started asking questions to them, and they said, well, no, a lot of times, he says, I'll take a weekend and I'll brew four or five, six of my house beers that are the same, and I'll just store them in a cube with no chill, and then in 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, a year, I'll use them. You know, and they claim that it's the same or better. You know, I can believe doing it and saying it's better is a natural thing, but you know, it's probably the same. And I thought, well, I'm going to try that, and I wish I could have done it longer. I only did 4 months, but it's worth a try. And
So before we get ahead of ourselves, let's just clarify to make sure that we're on the same page. No chill is just regular brewing, except for when you're at the end of your boil in the kettle, you don't chill. You don't run it through any kind of plate chiller. You don't put an immersion chiller in there. What do you do? I mean, give the details of the no chill.
Okay, well, originally, I had never heard of it, and it came about by accident. I had three batches, and I never had a bad batch ever. I had bad beer, but not a bad batch. But I had three batches in a row. They had totally infected, and long story short, I found out that a connection on my cooling coil was leaking well water right into the cooled wort, which totally killed it, and I found that out on the third time. And it just so happens, about that time, I was talking with the guys in Australia, and they were talking about this method, and I thought, I think I'm going to try this, because it seemed easier than actually welding the thing back together again. And it was new and radical and whatnot, so I wanted to try it. And I bought a cube, and I tried it, and it worked beautifully. I had no problems whatsoever. So it's just a matter of taking the wort after it's done boiling, I stir it, trying to do a whirlpool, which I fail at every time, but I try. I might give it 10 minutes, and then I just open the spigot, and I use a heat-sensitive tube, and then run it right into the cube. I lightly cover it, or put the cover on it, and then I run it over the wall or something. I squeeze the oxygen out, seal it tightly, and then I just let it. It's hot, you know, and I just let it, if in the wintertime, I bring it in the house, put it in the washroom or something where I can get the heat. In the summertime, I leave it outside. But it seems to work just fine for me.
And generally, do you pitch the next day? You transfer it into a fermenter and pitch the next day?
Normally, yeah, I really do. I usually, I'm kind of on a roll, so the next day when it's cool, I put it up on a table or something, and then I draw it off, and it's pretty much crystal clear when I pull it out. I do use Irish moss. I like it, and it's pretty clear, it's sometimes awesomely clear. So and that's one thing about brewing the bag, and it's not off the subject, but sometimes they say it's not as clear, and they think, well, with that no chill, how could it clear up it? The next day it gets on the bottom, any warm break, cold break, or anything, it's on the bottom, and I just put my trusty, what do you call it there?
Rack and cane.
Yeah, and I put the rack and cane just above it, and I just pull out clear liquid. Usually, I'd say 98% of the time, it's the next day, but I've gone 2 or 3 weeks in the past, and then I got around to it. And as I talked to him, I thought, well, I'm going to try a little longer. Because the Aussies do up to a year,
yeah.
You know, and so why can't I do at least 4 months and just give it a try?
You had a question before.
I was just wanting a clarification on what a cube was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, a cube is either round or square. How's that? Does that narrow it down for you?
Well, but I think, is it a plastic container? Is it a metal container?
Yeah. No, it's plastic. The original one that I bought, I was a little worried about because you don't buy them online as a no-chill container. So I bought what I thought would be safe. It was, you know, perfect for acid, high temperatures, foodstuffs. You could put kryptonite in it, and it would be fine. I used that, and it worked fine. And it's still my favorite one, but it cost like $65,
wow.
You know, and that's quite high. And I went online and talked to other people, they found them less than $20. And maybe they're not as good, but they're good enough.
Yeah.
There's no problems with them. They're all food safe. They'll take over 250 degrees, and you only need 212. So, yeah, they're out there. But nobody at this point wants to say, this is no chill cooler, buy it from this company. It's you're on your own.
So talk about the procedure for this experiment.
Well, I tried to do everything identical. I found the very nice recipe there on the New Albion in good old BYO magazine. And I tried to follow that perfectly. And it was simple. It was like 17 grams of Cascade three different times and a basic 7 pounds, I think it was, of malt. I don't remember offhand. But I did it. No fanciness. That was the unfortunate incident when it took the fall, so all my paperwork was never done because I didn't even know I brewed the beer so for a couple of days. But so I didn't take any readings, and I followed through on the second one, which I did exactly the same way, identical, but I didn't write the readings down either, so don't ask.
So the only difference, in theory, the only difference between the two beers is one was stored in the plastic container for 4 months.
Mm-hmm.
The other, you brewed, let it sit overnight, and then transferred both of them in the same day to a fermenter and pitched both of them at the same time?
Yes, exactly. I put two super cleaned
Carboys,
yeah, at the same time, and I poured them. I bought two 1056s, and I put one in each. And, you know, they should have been, theoretically, they both fermented real well, but theoretically, they should be pretty much perfect. Whether they're a good beer or not, I don't know, since I can't taste them right now, but that's what you guys are going to tell, you know.
Yeah, so we'll fill the audience in a little bit. You experienced a fall, you hit your head, your taste buds, your taste sense of taste was affected. So we were going to help you.
Thank you.
Judge. And
I don't smell very good.
Well, I was going to tell you about that later, but...
Oh, yeah, you know what I'm saying.
Oh, I tell you.
I tell you. I respect.
But did you see any difference in the fermentation?
None. Actually, there was a problem that one of them, I used the wrong lid, and because I was using buckets, and that one had a slight leak, so it didn't bubble, and I was worried at first, but then I pulled both covers off, and they were up to the same amount, beautiful fermentation. They looked great, so it was no problem that way.
Did you take gravity readings at the end?
No, sir, I did not.
Please answer the question.
Do you own a hydrometer?
Yes, I do.
Do you know where it is?
Yes.
Is it out of the package?
I use a refractometer. I use a hydrometer. And when I've got my basic brewing radio book, I fill out everything beautifully. But because of the, I didn't write anything down the first time, you know, luckily, I got to say this, the beer was done and sealed and put away before I had my mishap.
Oh, okay.
So everything is up to snuff on that. You know, if it was afterwards, then we'd be, you know, yeah. I don't know. But I didn't take any readings, no. I'm sorry.
Well, we're glad you're okay, first of all. But
thank you.
So, Andy, you're kind of a, even, we did a, last year at the conference, we did another no-chill experiment. But you did dry hopping in the fermenter on both of those, right? And we had very difficulty. We had a very difficult time telling any difference between those samples.
Yeah. I don't remember exactly if that was the reason, or was just the fact that we were showcasing the fact that we were no chilling them, which is pretty rare at that time.
I think. And we'll have to go back and listen to the archives, but I think it was a no chill versus regular chilling. But the issue was that you put hops in the fermenter in both of them, and so that we were thinking that might have masked some of the differences between the two, or that was a theory. But they were both very close. So Andy, you're kind of skeptical about this practice of leaving wort chilled or not chilled in this way in a plastic container for a long period of time, right?
Well, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if lots of your listeners are all kind of cringing at the idea of putting freshly boiled wort, something that you've worked part of the afternoon on, locking the lid and then walking away for months. Will it work? Probably. Could it ever go bad? Probably, you know. So for me, it leaves me with an uneasy feeling of leaving my wort kind of in that state. But obviously, you know, lots of people do it, and you know, this will be an interesting experiment to see if the wort sitting for 4 months changes the flavor at all.
Have there been any reports of cubes, whatever their shape, bursting or blowing up or going bad?
There have been. And actually, it happened to me one time where I was doing an overnight theoretical no chill, and I was going to do it the next day. I was out in the garage, and we were going on a slight trip, and we had guys working on the roof of the garage, putting down new tiles. And I had opened up, because I had to do this before I left, I opened up the top of the bucket. And right about that time, some guy threw about an 80-pound wad of tile on the roof, and poof, you know, everything came down, and I'm trying to cover this thing, you know. I thought, oh, yeah, I think I saved it. I put it in the cube, and I thought I was all right. He came back 3 days later, and that cube was, whoa, it was ready to pop. No one that I know have ever had one pop, but you could see right away. Huh. And they say, actually, it's one of the good things about it, because after a day or two, and most people do it right away, but after a day or two, if there is an infection, that baby's going to fill up, and you're going to know, and you can say, well, I'm going to dump it right away, whereas if you do it the old-fashioned way, you don't know until the basement starts stinking real bad.
Now, I've done a no-chill batch, and when you put the hot wort in there, and seal it, as it chills, it shrinks up. I mean, you know, the sides cave in on that plastic container. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't take much to, you know, if you see your plastic container resume its usual shape, that would be an indication that you might have a problem.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's true.
So it's one large stabilization test.
Yeah. How neat are you? How clean are you? Well, this is interesting. What are we going to do here? We're going to have three samples.
Three samples. One done in January of this year. Another one done in late May. I was getting a little lazy there, but and then the other one is the standard New Albion from the Boston.
Boston Beer Company, Boston Sam Beer Adams Company. People. So Sam this is Adams, the this yeah. is the commercial example, the Jack McAuliffe recipe that they did. So any other questions before we get to the tasting? What we're going to do, Andy?
Yeah, you know, so why would this be of benefit to people? And I think I know why for Bob, but maybe Bob could clarify why people would want to do this, why this makes their brew day better or faster or makes it easier.
Well, the main thing for the majority of guys that do it is that they're reusing their yeast cakes. And a lot of times, I want to brew a beer now, but I want to use the yeast cake and it isn't ready yet. I got to wait another week. But this is my opportunity. So I'll brew it, I'll put it in the no-chill container, and I'll wait 2 or 3 weeks or whenever. The other beer, I keg it, and then I got this nice yeast cake, and then I put it in. And once you kind of start doing this, you're thinking, oh, wow, okay. So now you're brewing your beers, and you're sitting there on them thinking, well, this yeast cake is going to come due. Ooh, this one's got this in it. I'm going to try that. That'll be different. And it's really nice. Some of the guys in Australia that have their house beer, they'll brew 4 or 5 beers in a weekend, you know, just make a job out of it. They'll put them up on the shelf, and then whenever they need their house beer, they pull off the wort, you know, add their whatever hops they have and any other little tricks they do to it, and then they got their beers, and they've done it all in one weekend, you know. So there's tricks you can do to reuse yeast and to just use your time better.
Bob, do you find that some styles work better than others for this process?
You know, I really haven't. I mean, I like to brew across the board, mm-hmm. and I like to be a heretic brewer. You know, I'll brew with anything. You know, if it's got sugar in it, I'll brew with it. So I haven't had a bad batch or a batch that I was really disappointed with in any particular style at any time. You know, I've brewed everything, and I like everything. And with my style of brewing or my capacities, I'm really happy with it. I am really happy with it.
And we should say that your taste buds are coming back. So
yes, slightly. I probably smell better than when you guys came in here. Slightly.
One of the things I can imagine, especially coming from Australia, is the biggest environmental concern for most people when you did your show a while ago was water usage. You've eliminated water waste. I mean, there is no water waste anymore. All water, other than what's left in your grains as you throw them away or to the chickens or whatever, you're using every drop of water that's going into the beer rather than, you know, 15 gallons for a 5-gallon batch being blown through a cooler. So I can imagine for Australia especially, that could be a big savings. And I like the idea from a time perspective of I could do 2 nights of an all-grain batch. We're trying to get a night, you know, an extract batch I can do in a night. All grain, I can't quite pull it off unless I'm going to stay up till 2 to 4 in the morning, which I might do. This one, you could start at 8, brew, put it in the jerry can, and then wait a couple days or, you know, the next night, and then set up the fermentation, and you're done. And you've broken up the pieces.
That's a good point about the water usage. Although, I mean, you are still using water to wash the jerry can and to sanitize the jerry can, but it is a good point that you're not just running water through an immersion chiller and letting it or having to collect it for later use.
Yeah. Well, what I normally do is when I have my no-chill containers, after I use them, I clean them physically the best I can, and then I'll put a 3 or 4 inches of star sand or something in them, and I just shake the living daylights out of it, and I store them. The rectangular one, I'll just every week or two, I'll flip it over because that's my favorite. I use that 80% of the time. And it's nice. I just flip it over, and then I know it's sanitized, all the sides and corners, and then the tube with the handle and all that. And then the day I'm brewing, when I get down to the end of the boil, I get a clean bucket. I put in my my silicon hose. It'll go up to 275 degrees Fahrenheit. I put it in the bottom of the bucket, and then I pour out the star sand into the bucket, and I usually invert that cube into it and let it just drip in there. So after 15 minutes, I've got the tube in there, and then it's just a matter of flipping it over, put the tube on, plug it in, you know, and drain it out. And that's foolproof. And it really, when you watch the other guys and all these group brews I do, people are, they take their coils and they put it in there and they cool their beer, and then the next guy's waiting in the line, he takes it and he moves it over, and then they're sitting there smoking and talking, and then they're flipping around and you're doing hoses. I have seen some horror stories, and I can't imagine how half those beers come out, you know. But this method, it's sealed, it's signed, and it's delivered.
Well, it sounds good. why don't we pour some beers and do a blind tasting? What we're going to do is you're going to be the steward, Bob,
yeah.
And you're going to give us beers. You're not going to tell us which, and then we'll taste and we'll make some mental notes and we'll come back.
Right after you tell me which beers you like, then I'll tell you which is which. That way, here I come out a little better.
Okay, we'll be back.
Yeah.
Well, that was interesting. The tasting is done. I have some opinions, but I'm going to go last in case I'm radically wrong.
That's never happened.
Andy, since you're closest, what do you think?
Well, I don't know really how to describe it to our listeners, but we had the cups. One has a C on the bottom, one has a G, and one is blank. So basically, I started with the first two that were lettered, the C and the G. I found them both to be extremely similar. The C one was maybe a hint sweeter, had a slightly sweeter nose to it, but very similar. The last one, the blank one, I found to have kind of a musty aroma, seemed oxidized to me. But that's about it. They're pretty similar. Hard to pull out much differences on them.
So along with Andy, the C and the G, the appearance for me, and everybody has their cups at different places. I think it's a little more obvious because I have a darker background. C and G are identical in appearance, and then the blank one is much lighter, and it was a very different beer from a visual appearance. C, I definitely had a little bit more. I finally was able to kind of give a little white pear ester. And as I drank it down towards the bottom, it really came out. And once I nailed that word, I went back and smelled them, and that's the only difference between C and B. I think if we did a triangle test of the two of them, we might be hard-pressed to pick them out. I did find that the blank one was definitely, not only was it paler, but some kind of an off aroma. I think it almost smells, it either could be oxidized, could be skunked. It's very strong for me, though, and it's one of those smells that I have trouble sometimes identifying because it's just hitting my sensors. But otherwise, as far as mouthfeel and body and everything else, and bitterness level, carbonation level, all seemed the same.
I'd say pretty much the same thing. For me, I did perceive a little bit of color difference between C and G. But again, it's, you know, it could be the light. It's very, very similar. I felt like that G was a little more astringent. I got a little astringency out of it that I didn't feel or taste from the other two. I thought that all three of them had extremely similar mouthfeel, hop sense, and perceived ABV. I thought that C had a kind of light lemony bouquet to it that I didn't perceive in the other two beers. And then finally, my guess is that the no-marked beer was the actual commercial New Albion beer. It just seemed to be the one that seemed to be the slightly odd duck out. So I'll throw that out there.
Here's my perceptions. C and G in color, the number one and number two beers, are very similar. The third one, the no label, is lighter in color. C was, in my pour, more clear than G. So the first one was more clear than the second one. The third one is the odd man out as far as the flavor. I perceived it to be. The bitterness is similar probably on all three, but I perceived a little teeny bit of maybe a DMS, maybe a corny, almost a Pilsner-y kind of flavor that I didn't get from the other two. Man, if you... all three are drinkable beers, I think, as Steve said while he was tasting. But the first two, C and G, if there were a triangle test, I don't know that we would pick those out. And do you have other samples of the... Do you have more bottles of the beer? So maybe we can do a triangle test. If it turns out, as I suspect, that the third one is the New Albion commercial example, maybe we can do another round with a triangle test to see if we can pick out the odd of between the first two. But as far as fermentation defects or yeast stress or anything like that, I don't detect anything like that. One does not seem more 4 months staler than the other. The bitterness level between what I suspect to be the two homebrews, the first two, is just darn close. And the hop character, there's not a whole lot of hop fruitiness like it's a late hopped or a dry hopped beer, but the hop character is very similar in both of them. So are we ready to unveil? What is it, Bob?
I forget, because that's what all that noise was with me with my notes over there. I think, who said it first? Maybe it was Steve. The blank one is the New Albion from Boston. Mm-hmm. It's a little lighter in the color. C and G, of course, are mine. And the C, the Coyote, which is the cap, that was the one brewed last January. G, which said Gringo or Granger or whatever, that one I brewed just last month. So
the C was, in mine, was it there a difference in the clarity between the C and the G in y'all's pours?
There was a difference in clarity in mine. G being slightly darker.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe the C had more time to settle out over 4 months.
Yeah,
I'd say, well, these guys are scoping it out. That C, meaning the oldest beer, is my favorite.
Oh, do you guys have a favorite of the three?
CG.
I would go with C. I think, and I don't think it has anything to do with the malt. Is I think just for some reason the yeast on that one just gave it a little bit tiny esters. You found it as lemony, Steve. I think both Andy and I picked up on it. It just so slight.
Yeah. Yeah, we're really splitting hairs here.
So it's I would guess that this is a
viable
a victory for your proponents of leaving the wort in the thing for months.
Yeah, I think it proves it out. I mean, it wasn't a fancy beer, and that was deliberate because I didn't want to be throwing late hops in and all this stuff to throw it out. This is as simple a beer as you can get. It's very common. Everybody loves it. So I thought I picked the right one. And I was happy that the way you guys come out with it, because everything tastes like Miller to me right now. So I'm glad that I didn't hear any dry heaves or anything, because I was worried.
No, I think they were all three well done. And I would drink all three, or either of the three. They're tasty. I have had a lot of the New Albions, which may also have given us who have had a bunch a little bit of an edge too. But wow, very interesting.
I find it personally really interesting because you would expect, given some of Stan Hieronymus's statements, and that a hoppy beer, the hops should just drop out over time. In 4 months, it should have literally the hops should have physically dropped out of the beer by now. Some of the lupulin and the acids and everything should. It should have been different. And I don't think any of us could detect a difference in the bitterness or the hop flavor or character.
Maybe things happen in the fermentation. Maybe you know, maybe that's the difference. Maybe it's more stable in the pre-fermented state than in the post-fermented state. Just throw that out there.
Yeah, I think I would probably be interested in seeing an experiment done with a beer that's supposed to not age well at all. And probably a double IPA would be a good target. Something and do a double. I mean, because if you think about it, most of that double IPA is in the boil. And, you know, there is some aroma characteristics, but really what was going to make it is in there. Go for it and then do the same thing either at 4 months or maybe at a year. According to current hop statements, it should be, you know, all these hot, you know, look, read a bottle of Pliny one day. Mm-hmm. You know, it'll you know, it'll be horrible if you let it sit for more than an hour. You know, and this would indicate maybe not so much. And I would like to see an experiment done with no chill with something just, I think, along that lines. It's not supposed to age well. Of course, in that case, maybe it's post-fermentation aging is different than pre-fermentation aging.
Yeah. Well, that was got back to my question about if Bob felt any one style was more or less suited.
I foresee, I'm going to make a prediction here. Zot is going to be ordering a plastic cherry can to play with.
Yeah, that might happen. I'm pretty sure I know where Bob got his secrets out. So, yeah, I could definitely see doing something like this, and just targeting a double IPA, I think, is probably the worst possible candidate. I mean, this would be, you know, as a pale ale, this would probably be up there, and I'm thinking, you know, anything else, it's all about, you know, all the other crazy characteristics are out of yeast, like a Saison or something, it's all about post-fermentation. And, I was trying to think of, would it help beers that are supposed to age, too, like an old ale or a barley wine? And my guess, based on this, is no.
Make another prediction. Andy is not going to be buying a plastic container. Does this have any sway or any influence on your opinion?
I think it's really interesting. I probably won't be doing much no-chill. I like to have my process wrapped up and everything underway and done, everything cleaned up and ready to go. But, you know, I think it's pretty interesting, and I certainly see how for some folks this is going to be a real benefit, right? You know, you could either, you know, work with friends and brew up a bunch and then take it home and then ferment at your house. You know, there's reasons why this might work out really well for certain people in certain, you know, groups. So, you know, I think, you know, it's not going to stop me from using my immersion chiller. But
well, it won't me either, but I have a no-chill confession to make that occasionally I'll get too energetic and I'll, you know, make the mash and do it all. And it's like, you know, 1 o'clock in the morning and I just can't go anymore. And I've been known to take the brew pot and put it on the back porch and throw a towel over it. I mean, sealed, but it's not technically, you know, sealed up, you know, hermetically, and then get up the next morning and draw the wort off and, you know, and pitch, and I've never had a problem with it. I've done it 3 or 4 times. It's not something I do on purpose, but it's like, well, I just can't do this anymore. And but I've never had a beer go bad or get, so that's for what it's worth.
Yeah, I've done it too, and I've heard, you know, guys over the years, well, I put the pot out in the snow, you know, because I was running short. I thought it would cool it, you know, and it, you know, it's an insulator, so it does last a long time. They left it overnight covered, and you know, they draw it off, and they didn't have a problem.
Yeah.
So we're kind of moving on from there, you know. We're just doing it properly, that's all.
And it's got to be putting it in the plastic container and shutting the lid is more secure than leaving it in the even a covered brew pot.
I'm not recommending it. I don't want people to think I'm saying brew this way. I'm just saying that circumstance has led me there, and I've gotten away with it.
Basic bad brewing by Steve.
Well, this has been fun. Anything else to add to the show? I was expecting. I wasn't expecting. I'm always skeptical about everything. I try to be skeptical about everything in life, and so I had a suspicion as that the hops were going to fall out, that the bitterness was going to fall out, but it apparently didn't. So there you go.
I just thought the beers would be very different. I thought there would be substantial perceived differences, and there weren't.
Yeah. And I was a little worried that it would be so bad that we would have the aged beer would be so bad that it would be embarrassing for Bob. And it, luckily, that didn't happen.
I do have a question on the process. So you pour into you let the kettle cool a bit, and then you pour into the jerry can or the cube, and then months later you take it out. How much stuff is at the bottom of the cube at that point?
Of course, obviously it depends. It depends if you dump the hops in and stuff like that. But, you're talking a half inch on the bottom. And when I draw off, the process I use is I put my siphon in and I push it right to the bottom and I push it down and I have a cup at the end of the hose to catch the gunk. And that initial suction cleans that little area out. And then if I don't touch anything, it just draws perfectly, and I've had a lot of gunk, and I've had just very little. It just depends on, if you use a lot of hops, and if it's a beer that's going to have a lot of cold break or hot break,
Yeah, because it does. You do get a cold break even though you're not chilling quickly.
Right.
Sometimes it happens. At some point, it happens.
Yeah, there's a magical number, and someone explained it to me, and I don't remember what it is, so I won't quote it. But they say it's going to, if you're no chilling, it's going to hit that temperature, and it cold breaks right down. And the next day, it's all gunked on the bottom. I mean, you can move your container if you got a thin one, or you can see, and it's solid down there, So it's easy to draw it off, and it's crystal clear when you draw it off, the next day even. So.
Well, very good. It's been fun and very informative and very thought-provoking. So thanks, Bob, for the brewing.
You're welcome. Pleasure to do it.
And thanks to Andy and Zot and Steve for the loaning of your taste buds.
Always there when it's good beer.
and sometimes when it's not.
We won't mention last year's experiment.
Well, thanks, guys.
This was a lot of fun. Thanks.
Thanks again to Bob for the experiment, and very surprising, pleasantly surprising. Can't wait to see what he comes up for next time. And thanks again to Zot O'Connor, Steve Wilkes, and Andy Sparks of thehomebrewery.com for their thoughts and opinions. And I will bet you that Zot has already placed his order for his plastic no-chill container. More from Philly next week. In the meantime, if you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com, and please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Our new Basic Brewing Growler bags are available in our shop. Protect your precious homebrew and craft beer as you take it from place to place as the weather warms up this season. Check out our new support link where you can throw a couple of bucks into the tip jar by subscribing financially to our podcasts. Be sure to check out our DVDs, of course. Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. We've got combo deals to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store, too. Our logbooks are, of course, in the store. Keep track of up to 50 batches of beer. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We greatly appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Geomorphology and River Management, Applications of the River Styles Framework, and Isonplug 12-volt portable air conditioner. Thanks again, everybody. Remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries there. Just click on the Amazon.com logo at our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own Magazine through the associate links on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dutson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.